Good morning. It is Friday, April the 12th. The war in the Middle East is now 189 days old. It might expand, as we're going to talk about. I am Jonathan Conricus, a newly appointed senior fellow at the FDD, and welcome back to the morning brief. It's my first opportunity to host, since Chanzer is traveling. I get the opportunity, and I hope that all of you will really enjoy and find this interesting. Our guest today is Emily Schrader. Emily is an Israeli-American journalist and human rights activist with a long track record of online activity, journalism, and commentary of various topics related to Israel and the Middle East, particularly as it pertains to Iranian society. And we are going to benefit from her insights in this on this very timely topic later in our show. We will speak with Emily in just a few short minutes about Iranian society, about the proxies, and how to deter Iran from attacking Israel and other relevant matters live right here on the FDD Morning Brief. A few words to say about that before. There's a lot of media hype and attention, and I would say even a minor panic in Israel over the so-called Iranian retaliation against Israel after 8 Iranian Quds Force members were killed in Damascus about a week ago. I'd like to suggest that it's actually the other way around. It's Israel for the first time striking Iranian targets after Iranians and their proxies have been attacking Israel for the last 6 months. Of course, through the likes of Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Lebanon, Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, a multitude of Iranian proxies in Syria, and the Houthis in Yemen. The options that Iran has are there. They have quite a lot of options, but when you really boil it down, more of the same would be any of the Iranian proxies that I just mentioned. And that wouldn't really perhaps scratch the itch that the Iranians have after 8 of their senior generals a senior general was killed and a few others were killed as well. The other options are perhaps striking a soft Israeli target abroad. Think Western Europe or Southeastern Asia. We know that Iran has the ability to do so. Maybe not ready to use operational infrastructure, but nevertheless have the ability to do so. And they may decide to strike U.S. forces in the Middle East or the real escalation to fire missiles at Israel directly from Iran. I personally have quite solid faith in Iranian strategic patience. They are disciplined. They are long-term thinkers. They do not take rash decisions based on emotions. And even though the rhetoric is high, I know that it wouldn't be smart for Iran to attack Israel, because then the distraction in Gaza and Lebanon will become a forgotten issue, and everything will focus on Iran, on its hostile and negative activities in the Middle East, and they themselves will be front and center of Israeli and perhaps U.S. attention, and the Iranians do not want that. They don't want it because it will put focus on their nuclear plans, and because it will take pressure off Israel from its fighting in Gaza and Lebanon. Last word, remember all of the talk about Ramadan. Ramadan has now passed. We're on the last day of the last holiday of Ramadan, and Israeli security forces have been able to thwart all of the attempted attacks, including suicide bombing attacks that were done by various Palestinian terrorists in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria. And thankfully, despite the hype, despite the pressure, despite the talk, we are now after Ramadan and preparing ourselves for things to come, hopefully good things to come. Now, a few quick headlines. Hamas is reportedly, according to U.S. media, not accepting the U.S. brokered offer to release hostages and to create a ceasefire. A lot hangs in this balance. There are still 133 Israeli hostages, out of whom, sadly, 32 have been confirmed dead. And the fate of many others is still unknown. The question is, what's the motivation behind Hamas not agreeing to this very generous deal that Israel has agreed to and now are waiting for Hamas to approve? Why won't they agree? And what's the motivation behind it? These are things that are interesting to look into. Definitely, I do not think that Hamas has the humanitarian situation in Gaza high up on their list of priorities, despite all of the media attention and how much Israel is being forced to deal with the topic. A second headline, very important one, is a change in tone and action regarding US and Israel. President Biden made very important statements, I think it was from Tokyo, addressing the situation in Israel and addressing Iranian threats against Israel. And we still have, or just concluded, the visit of CENTCOM commander General Kurila visiting in Israel, I think for the second time since October the 7th, here to coordinate, according to media reports, to coordinate responses and contingencies for an Iranian attack against Israel. These two things are very important. I think that there are a welcome shift in recent messaging and actions on the ground in the U.S. Capitol. And I think that that has a chilling effect, a very important chilling effect on the Iranians. Last headline is a glance towards Turkey. There's a Turkish economic embargo in place on Israel. They are not exporting any goods to Israel. They're planning a flotilla of so-called aid to Gaza, perhaps a rerun of the May 2010 Mavi Marmara horrible incident where terrorist supporters were sent from Turkey to Israel in order to get to inside Gaza. It ended with a lot of casualties and a severing of ties between Turkey and Israel, and ties have not gone back to what they were ever since. And we also see an elevated rhetoric from Turkey, from Erdogan himself, but also from other politicians, very hostile towards Israel. And I think this is something that we need to follow. The flotilla, if it leaves and if it comes to the shores of Israel, should be here in less than a week. And that will be a very interesting moment to follow. Now, I'm very happy to have with us today, Emily. Welcome, Emily. It's great to have you here on the FDD Morning Brief, actually for the first time. And we're going to dive right into Iranian society and the crossroads between the repressive Iranian regime and the people of Iran. So welcome, Emily. We'll get right to it, and I'm happy to have you here with us for the first time. Since you've been following Iran and Iranian society for quite a while, could you please, you know, describe how the Iranian regime, not the people, but the Iranian regime has been engaging in what we call digital warfare and media warfare? How has their activity been? How effective are they? And what kind of real influence does the Iranian regime have?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan of FDD and all that you guys do, so it's a great honor to be here. When it comes to the disinformation campaign of the Islamic Republic, they are very, very prolific when it comes to putting out false narratives on social media, targeting dissidents, targeting activists, even like myself, who are vocal, who are active on social media and who expose a lot of the activities that they're doing. I think that you spoke earlier just in this morning brief about how it's in fact Israel responding to months of Iranian aggression. That's entirely accurate. And the reason for that, I suspect, as a non-military expert, I suspect is that Iran doesn't really have the capacity to do what they want to do. They talk a big talk, but they're not really able to do that. So what are they doing? They're focusing on cyber attacks. They're focusing on disinformation. And unfortunately, we've seen that social media has become a major, major battleground for the war of ideas. And we don't see that any more prominently than right now with the war in Gaza. And Iran has been very, very active. Their Basiji, their cyber forces, have been very active on social media platforms, putting out false narratives with claims that, you know, Israel is starving Palestinians to death in Gaza, that Israel is targeting humanitarian operations, all number of claims that we hear being repeated, sometimes now even on campuses. And where is that coming from? Where is this information coming from, despite the fact that the facts, when you actually look at the evidence on the ground, don't support any of them? Israel is not committing genocide. Israel is doing everything they can to avoid that. Israel's not targeting civilians, and they're certainly not indiscriminately attacking. They're doing the opposite. And yet, if you look at social media, especially in conversations that are related to Iran or with individuals who engage with the Iranian issue like myself, you will see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of responses, of messages, even messages that I get, which I know are from fake accounts, both in Persian I receive and in English, with these false claims. So definitely this is a strategy that they're using now, that they're doubling down on, but it's also something that they've been doing for many, many years. And I think that pretty much any Iranian, especially Iranian activists, is familiar with this if they're on social media. They know how the regime works. They know that they have a vested interest in promoting false narratives, not twisted narratives, but in some cases blatantly false. And, you know, if you look at their track record, what they've done with the false flag operations that the regime itself has done, such as the downing of PS-752, the flight that they shot down full of Iranian citizens. And the entire purpose of this was to frame Israel. That was their initial goal. Now, they weren't able to because people found out too quickly, but that's how they work. You know, this is one of the things they're good at, is the information warfare, the psychological warfare. And we see that right now as well.
Including, of course, threats in Hebrew aimed at the target audiences in Israel. And yeah, as you say, many, many other things. And sadly, they are quite good at what they do. Now, let's shift to Iranian society, people that are not the regime and not bots or fake accounts. How would you describe the relations between Israeli and Iranian civil societies? And how have these relations reacted to the war in Gaza and the situation with Hezbollah, both, if you can touch, both on Iranians in Iran and the vast Iranian diaspora? That's an interesting topic, and I'm sure it's different relations than what we see reflected in official state-sponsored Iranian media.
Very, very much so. I mean, I think the relations between Israelis and Iranians are probably stronger than ever when it comes to this conflict. And the reason for that is, since the onset of the Gaza war, the Iranians knew from day one how Hamas operates. They knew what their goals were. They knew they were going to use hospitals. They knew they were going to use civilians. And they know that because that's exactly what their regime does. And of course, the sponsor of Hamas is the Islamic Republic. So every claim, every information that Israel and Israelis put out about what was happening, they knew. They knew it was true because they've lived it. It's been their experience. And so we've seen a huge outpouring of support from the Iranian diaspora in Belgium, in the UK, Canada, Israel, Persians in Israel, America, Australia, all over the world, we've seen Iranians coming out in support. But also in Iran, we're seeing a lot of people. I'm getting messages on a daily basis from Iranians that I interact with on the ground there in Iran through social media, saying, why doesn't Israel do something? Why don't they attack IRGC targets? Why don't they focus on taking out this regime? We're with you 110%. We know that what Hamas is doing is evil. We know that it's a function. It's an arm of the head of the snake of the Iranian regime. And we're not going to tolerate it. So I think that people don't understand that there is that sort of connection between these two people who really, historically speaking, have every reason to support each other. I mean, there's a lot of similarities culturally and historically when it comes to these two groups of people. And so in a way, it's very logical that you would see this sort of solidarity right now, because the people of Iran and the people of Israel have the same interests, and that is safety, freedom, security, and the downfall of the Islamic Republic. That's what it's going to take for them to really be free.
Which brings me to another question, and it's really about maybe the similarities that maybe exist between Palestinians on one hand and the Iranian people in Iran on the other hand. And Maybe you could speak a little bit about, I mean, you say that you've been getting messages from Iranians, which indicates that they believe that they have the freedom of, you know, at least that they're not being monitored, so they can reach out to you. But
maybe they know they're being monitored.
They know. So they're very
brave. But they're working through multiple VPNs. They have, the Iranians are smart. As you said, Iranians are very smart, for better or for worse. So they know how to work around. But yes, of course, there's always that risk for them. Yeah.
Right. So let's speak a little bit about, maybe draw a comparison here between Palestinians and Iranians living under an oppressive regime. And maybe your assessment on, if there is a direct war between Israel and Iran, how would you assess that Iranians, you know, everyday ordinary people would react to such a situation based on your interactions?
Well, I think that the Iranian people and the Palestinians, at least in Gaza, according to the polling that's been done from Palestinian sources, I should note, is very, very different. The majority of Palestinians, unfortunately, support what happened on October 7th. They have stated that they support Hamas. And while it's not every Palestinian, of course, it is a majority. In Iran, you see the polar opposite. You see a people who for many years, for 45 years now, have resisted what this regime stands for, what this regime is doing, even at great, great cost to themselves in some cases, including in the last year, we saw massive uprisings against the government. They just don't have the power to be able to take out this regime yet. We never saw anything like that from Palestinians. And I think that Iranians actually know that. If you see some of the rhetoric and the conversations happening in Iranian circles, they're very, very much against Palestinians. I would say even more so than Israelis. And a huge part of that is because their money, their funding as a nation, is instead of being invested in the country of Iran, they're being invested in terrorist organizations and in Palestinian hate groups that are going around murdering and kidnapping Israeli civilians. And so, of course, the Iranian people are furious with this. They're very patriotic. They want to see their country thrive and survive. And what the regime is doing is the opposite. And I also want to note one more thing that's really important to understand about the Iranian issue. And that is that when it comes to the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the PLO and Yasser Arafat were hugely instrumental in this revolution. They were allied with Khomeini at the time in Lebanon long before. They were working together on this. They were on the ground within days of the Islamic Revolution. They were, you know, presenting speeches of Arafat from inside what was the Israeli embassy, declaring it the PLO embassy. So these ties between Palestinian terrorism and the Islamic Republic of Iran are fundamental. It's an actual part of the Iranian regime's revolution. It's a part of their story. It's a part of their strategy. And the Iranian people know that. They know that that's the reality. When it comes to what I think the sentiment will be if, God forbid, there is an escalation and a war, I think that the Iranian people will support Israel. I think that they'll support Israel strongly, and they know exactly what Israel is doing. And in a way, they trust Israel to get the job done, and to be able to target as effectively as possible, to target only the regime and not harm anyone else. Now, no one wants war, certainly not Israelis and not Iranians, but they do want a downfall to this regime. And so I think we're going to see a lot of painful but supportive messaging when it comes to this issue. And hopefully it doesn't get to that point.
I'm sure that the Iranian regime is aware of what you're saying, and I'm sure that they have assessments of it as well, and they're taking this into account when they calculate whether or not to attack Israel and risk really a full-out war. Last question, we have time for a short question. Let's do something a little bit more positive. What do you think the potential paths forward are for the two peoples on a civil level, and how could the relations, you know, be leveraged into something that is more conducive of truth and reconciliation at the people-to-people level? Do you think that there's room for that in this environment and today?
I mean, I think that we're already starting to see the beginnings of that when it comes to social media. I mean, I've been operating on the social media front when it comes to Israel and really all Middle Eastern issues for many years now. And I've never seen the amount of support that I have seen from the Iranian people, even in the recent, you know, 6 months since the war started. Usually it's sort of like supporters of Israel and allies. They're very outnumbered on social media. and they're pushing back against a prevailing narrative that is actually false. For the first time, we're seeing that a lot of the opposition to those false narratives is being led, in some cases, by Iranians, whether it be on the ground, you know, in protests like what we're seeing in the UK, or on social media. You see that Iranians are sometimes the first people to respond to the false claims of the UN, to the excuse making of, you know, those who are trying to whitewash or justify the crimes against humanity being committed by Hamas on the ground in Gaza. We see that skepticism is expressed with all the claims that are put forward, with all the footage that purports to be from Gaza that may or may not be. All of that is coming from Iranians. And they're also not afraid to call out the lies, you know, from folks like Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur, who's been extremely critical, borderline anti-Semitic when it comes to this Gaza war, and also her previous statements. You can see on all of her posts, all of her content, Iranians are pushing back against this. They're very active. They love social media, and they're engaging on this front. They're pushing back against the false narratives. And I think that is sort of paving the way for a better future, hopefully on social media as well, but certainly between Iranians and Israelis, because they really understand what the threats are. And unfortunately, most of the Western world does not. They do not understand the depravity and the evil of the Islamic Republic. And so we need to continue to educate them, not just the Jewish community or Israelis, but Iranians as well. We need to push back against this, because this ignorance is what has allowed the Islamic Republic to come to power in the first place from 1979 until today. And we cannot let that happen. We have to fight back.
So let's end it on that positive note. Emily Schrader, thank you very much for your time. I found this very enlightening, and I'm sure that our viewers did as well. So thank you for being with us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Just in closing, a quick update on what the FTD has on tap for you today. FTD research fellow Hussein Abdul Hussein is out with a new piece in the Daily Beast about Iran's sponsorship of chaos going far beyond Israel and Gaza, by the way, related to what we just spoke about, as Iran aims to achieve dominance in the wider Persian Gulf to include Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. Hussein notes the important position of Jordan with the backing of Israel and America in thwarting Iran's advances. So that's an interesting piece to read, and I'm tracking that topic as well. My colleague from FTD Center on Economic and Financial Power, they're out with a new piece urging U.S. policymakers to look beyond the problem of TikTok and to take a more comprehensive view of the surveillance risks posed by a wide range of Chinese companies on America's shores, or actually inside America. And finally, FTD senior advisor Rich Goldberg has been focusing on how financial analytic firm MSCI may be violating state law with its environmental, social, governance, or ESG ratings on Israel-connected companies, probably being hijacked by the BDS movement. Rich has been ahead of the curve on this, as on many other matters, in highlighting ways that the BDS movement has hijacked ESG ratings to promote anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli policies. That's it for today. I urge you to read our expert analysis on our website on ftd.org, and to read our quick takes and our flash briefs on Twitter or X at FDD. And make sure that you subscribe to FDD on YouTube so that you do not miss our excellent content. Thanks for joining me today. I hope this was good. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you again. Shalom. Thank you.